Да здравствует 60-я годовщина Великой Октябрьской социалистической революции! Да здравствует героический советский народ и его доблестные вооруженные силы! Слава Коммунистической партии Советского Союза, руководящей и направляющей силе советского общества! Ура!
Listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU, I am Siegfried, and there's a lot to talk about today. First of all, the levels of resistance against the genocidal war being waged on the Palestinian people in Gaza and the West Bank, and increasingly in the wider Middle East as well. The resistance in the West, in the collective West, is growing strong and increasingly undeniable. You know, we see on multiple college campuses, university campuses across the United States, students are rising up, occupying their campuses and defying the police, defying the administrations of their colleges, defying, you know, the political elites who are trying to silence them, who are trying to sideline them, and who of course are supplying the Israeli army, the Israeli apartheid state, with the weapons it needs to carry out these genocidal operations in Gaza. And of course, I should also mention that it looks like Israel is indeed going to attack Rafah, where there is at least 1 million Palestinian refugees concentrated. That could be happening any day now. And increasingly, people are just not having it. They're rising up. They're resisting. There's encampments happening in Canada as well now on various campuses. And this movement is spreading. It's spreading, and it's increasingly defiant. This is an inspiring thing. I mean, even Palestinians have expressed how inspiring this is to see that level of solidarity. They did not expect that coming from anyone in the West. So I wanted to point that out right at the beginning here, because of course there's a lot of other things going on as well, as we see the ramping up of imperialist tensions in the world, of the United States increasingly getting aggressive towards China, for example. And with this TikTok ban, which is simultaneously aimed at China and shutting down a successful Chinese company, but it's also aimed at, and by extension, of course, helping Google, Apple, Meta, and all of course these American companies, which of course don't want Chinese competition and want to maintain their stranglehold over high tech. But in addition to that, of course, and this was said explicitly by U.S. senators and people who were putting forward this bill last week to ban TikTok in the United States if it doesn't get sold to an American company. Basically, they were explicitly saying TikTok is promoting Palestinian resistance. It's encouraging young people to stand up for Palestine, to do these kind of things like occupying their college campuses and things like that. And therefore, it constitutes a threat, you know, to the American order, you know, to the established global system and to capitalism and to the imperial order as the United States has set it up around the world. So therefore, it has to be taken down. That is really the justification, one of the main justifications put forward. So it does have to do with Palestine. Why the United States is trying to ban TikTok. And of course, it's not actually TikTok itself that's so supportive of Palestine. It's just that there are many, 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 many people, increasing numbers of people on TikTok who are basically flooding with pro-Palestinian content. Like they're enraged, justifiably, by what is going on in Palestine, by the atrocities going on. They're making their feelings known, and they're taking a stand. They're being brave. They're being courageous. And this has become impossible for the system to ignore. So that's why they're trying to censor TikTok, ban TikTok, take it down. It's not just because it's Chinese and they don't like the competition from another country which has the power to resist the United States if it wants to. China is an independent country. So increasingly China has also been supportive of Palestine as well, standing up for Palestine at the UN, for example. And that is something the United States wants to punish China for, in addition to the ramping up of tensions over Taiwan, where, of course, there's now U.S. special forces positioned on small islands, only 3 kilometers off the Chinese coast. And we're supposed to believe that that is not a provocation. So, I know I've been playing a lot of clips from Ben Norton of Geopolitical Economy Report on back in the USSR over the last few weeks. And he did an amazing just unpacking of everything that went into this whole like TikTok ban, you know, which could easily be replicated in Canada, by the way, if it goes through in the US, which I mean it has basically gone through. I mean, Joe Biden signed it, so it easily could be replicated here. And we all need to understand the reasons why this is happening right now and why it matters. So please stay tuned to Back in the USSR. I'm going to get into that clip right now.
The U.S. government is preparing to ban TikTok, one of the most popular apps in the country. U.S. President Joe Biden officially signed the law on the 24th of April, saying that the U.S. government will ban TikTok unless the parent company of TikTok, the Chinese company ByteDance, agrees to sell it to a U.S. company or another Western company. This is the latest example of the economic war that the United States is waging against China, and in particular against Chinese technology companies. Now, several weeks ago when the U.S. Congress approved this law, I published an analysis here in which I looked at how the U.S. is waging a tech war on China and the real motivation behind Washington's ban on TikTok, which is aimed ultimately at protecting big tech monopolies in the U.S. Now that Biden has signed the law, the clock is ticking. TikTok only has 1 year, and its Chinese parent company, ByteDance, has said very clearly that it is not going to sell TikTok. So it's very likely that the U.S. government is going to be banning this app. Again, one of the most popular apps in the country. It has 170 million users in the U.S., which is half of the entire population, and especially among young people in the U.S. So here is this analysis that I published. I updated it for the latest news so you can understand why this is so geopolitically important. The U.S. is trying to prevent China from technologically developing, and TikTok is only one part of this larger technological war. The U.S. Commerce Secretary, Gina Raimondo, made this clear as day back in 2021. She stated, quote, "If we really want to slow down China's rate of innovation, we need to work with Europe, calling to prevent China from technologically innovating." The U.S. Commerce Secretary has since repeated comments like this multiple times. This March 2024, she said that the U.S. will do whatever it takes to prevent China from getting access to the most advanced technology. Whatever it takes, she said. And in a press conference, she referred to China as the greatest threat the U.S. has ever faced. It's not a coincidence that also in March, U.S. President Biden called for an investigation into the so-called national security risks posed by Chinese electric vehicles. The Biden White House published an official statement claiming, quote, "Chinese automakers are seeking to flood the autos market in the United States and globally, posing new threats to our national security." Now, I don't think it's a coincidence that Biden made this statement just a few weeks after the billionaire oligarch Elon Musk, the CEO of Tesla, he said publicly that we need trade barriers because Tesla cannot compete with Chinese electric vehicles. And the European Union is doing exactly the same thing. The European Commission announced an official investigation into Chinese electric vehicles as part of a larger anti-dumping investigation. And their complaint is that China, the government, has subsidized the creation of electric vehicles as part of its industrial policy to transition toward renewable energy and green technologies. In fact, also this March, the EU announced that it is likely going to put retroactive tariffs on Chinese EVs. And of course, this came just a few weeks after Elon Musk called for trade barriers, and that's exactly what's happening. So here we're getting at the root of the issue. The West is waging a technological war on China, and their explicitly stated goal is to prevent China from catching up technologically, from advancing, and from competing with their own corporate monopolies. And really, it's the U.S. corporate monopolies, because Europe does not have a lot of big tech corporations. This is an attempt to save the monopolies in the U.S. so they can continue to dominate the entire world, so there are no alternatives to U.S. corporate domination. And furthermore, it's part of a larger geopolitical conflict in which the United States is trying to maintain its unipolar imperial control over the planet by making countries around the world dependent on its technology, on its apps, on its capital. India is a very clear example of this. India is governed by a far-right political party called the BJP, and its prime minister, Narendra Modi, is very anti-China and very pro-West. And for years, the U.S. government has been trying to recruit India for its new Cold War on China. Going back to the Barack Obama administration, Donald Trump did it as well, and Biden has continued working closely with India to try to contain China economically and politically. India has joined the Quadrilateral Security Dialogue, the Quad, which is an anti-China military bloc. And back in 2020, India banned 59 major Chinese apps, including TikTok. So India is really the test case here. And when U.S. Congress members were arguing in support of banning TikTok, they cited India as an example. However, what was the result of banning TikTok in India? Well, it actually helped to solidify the control of U.S. big tech monopolies over India, the most populous country on earth with 1.4 billion people. If you look at the market share of social media companies in India, they're all U.S. social media companies, the top companies. Facebook, Instagram, which are both owned by Meta, YouTube, owned by Google, which is Alphabet, Twitter, Pinterest, and LinkedIn. These are all U.S. big tech corporations. India does not have alternatives to U.S. big tech corporations. So even calling this protectionism is a bit misleading. I mean, it is protectionist, but the real point of protectionism is you want to use trade barriers and tariffs and subsidies and such to help to develop your own local industries in the country so they can compete internationally. And finally, when they're able to compete, then you can lift some of those trade barriers and restrictions. This is what all of the Western powers did when they economically developed, as the South Korean development economist Ha Jun-chang has shown in his research, especially his book, Kicking Away the Ladder. All of the major Western countries economically developed, of course, through colonialism and slavery and war, but also through very large tariffs and protectionism, building up their local industries. But India doesn't have serious alternatives to these U.S. big tech monopolies, and India is not protecting its own alternatives locally from the U.S. companies. So it's not actually protectionism. It's economic war. It's technological war aimed at China. It's not all foreign companies that are being targeted. It's Chinese companies that are being targeted. And this is a concerted attempt led by the U.S. and its allies and proxies to try to bankrupt and sabotage all of the Chinese competitors to its big tech monopolies. In fact, Forbes published a very revealing article back in 2023 titled, "Banning TikTok Would Boost Alphabet, Meta, and Snap. Here's how much their stocks could jump." So this really let the cat out of the bag. This is the financial press in the U.S. salivating over the idea of banning competitors to U.S. big tech monopolies. And that's not all. Back in 2022, the Washington Post reported that Facebook and its parent company Meta had hired dozens of PR firms across the United States to spread propaganda and disinformation to demonize TikTok, lobbying to get TikTok banned, of course, because TikTok is one of the biggest competitors to Meta. And of course, Meta is the parent company of Facebook, of Instagram, and also of WhatsApp, one of the most popular messaging programs in the entire world. And of course, Meta's CEO is the billionaire oligarch Mark Zuckerberg. And Meta has many contracts, billions of dollars of contracts with different US government agencies. And what's particularly funny is that Facebook hired a political firm that is closely linked to the Republican Party, and they use conservative messaging to portray TikTok as a so-called Chinese communist threat, and also to portray TikTok as a threat to children in the US. Now, it's often forgotten, but back when Trump was president in 2020, he pledged that he was going to ban TikTok. Back in August 2020, Donald Trump signed an executive order referring to TikTok as a so-called national security threat. I'm reading here from Trump's executive order. "The spread in the United States of mobile applications developed and owned by companies in the People's Republic of China continues to threaten the national security, foreign policy, and economy of the United States." Note how he singled out the economy in particular. He means a threat to U.S. big tech monopolies. And then he said, Trump said in the executive order, quote, action must be taken to address the threat posed by one mobile application in particular, TikTok. NPR reported on this at the time with the headline, Trump signs executive order that will effectively ban use of TikTok in the US. However, the reason that TikTok was not banned back in 2020 is because two different judges in US courts overturned Trump's executive order saying that it was unconstitutional and that he could not ban TikTok. This is why it's especially hypocritical that now, in 2024, Trump has done a 180 and he claims to oppose banning TikTok. And of course, there are a variety of reasons that he's doing this. First of all, Trump is doing this because Biden is the one who's trying to ban TikTok. And Trump, with the election coming up, is trying to win support from young voters. Of course, TikTok is very popular among young people. Furthermore, Trump made this announcement that he's going to oppose the ban of TikTok after he met with a major conservative donor who is a hedge fund manager who's invested in TikTok. So it's part of the economic interests of his donors. And furthermore, Trump said that he opposes banning TikTok because it would strengthen Meta and Facebook, which he's also against. So, I mean, this is not motivated by some noble cause. I mean, the idea that it's about freedom of speech or something is nonsense because Trump had no problem violating freedom of speech and signing an executive order trying to ban TikTok back in 2020 when he was president. So he's being extremely hypocritical and cynical. And if Biden bans TikTok, it's very likely that Trump will not reverse that order. But he's just, engaging in politics like all US politicians who are very deeply hypocritical. Now, I think it's really important to talk about that recent history because one of the common narratives that we've been hearing recently is that the reason the US government is trying to ban TikTok is because it supposedly spreads anti-Israel propaganda, which is ridiculous. I mean, in fact, there have been studies that show that if anything, pro-Palestinian material is not promoted more than it's actually represented on the platform. The reason that there is so much pro-Palestinian material on TikTok is not because the algorithm promotes it. On the contrary, it's because most users on TikTok are young people, and young people are overwhelmingly pro-Palestinian and oppose Israeli apartheid and its war crimes against the Palestinian people and its colonialist policies. They're against colonialism and they're against racism and they support the Palestinian people. But again, this is not simply about Israel-Palestine because this most recent war in Gaza began back in October. But as I've showed today, for years now, the US government has been trying to find excuses to ban TikTok, and it's because of China. Now, you can say that maybe now with the war in Gaza, they have an excuse over Israel, and they can use the excuse that it's supposedly spreading anti-Israel propaganda. But the fundamental reason is that this is a US economic war on China. And there are historical echoes of this. Back in the 1980s, the US government was engaged in a similar economic war against Japan. And in fact, in 1987, Republican lawmakers outside the US Capitol brought out sledgehammers and they destroyed a Toshiba stereo, a boombox from the Japanese company Toshiba. And at that time, back in 1987, the US Congress was considering very similar legislation to ban the sale of Japanese products, in particular Toshiba computers. And the Washington Post published an op-ed back in 1987 titled, Boycott Toshiba Computers, but don't let Congress force you. And the point of the article was, let the market operate, and instead of banning it, just tell people to boycott these Japanese products. And you know what also happened that same year in 1987? Ronald Reagan, the right-wing Republican, the godfather of neoliberal economic orthodoxy and free market fundamentalism, in that year, he imposed 100% tariffs on Japanese electronics products because U.S. tech corporations were unable to compete with Japanese companies. And can you guess what the reason for this was? It was in a dispute over semiconductors, which is exactly what is happening again today. The Biden administration has passed several different measures banning the export of advanced semiconductors to China in what is being referred to as a chip war. And Washington's goal is to try to prevent China from developing and innovating in some of the most important cutting-edge technologies, such as artificial intelligence and quantum computing. The ultimate irony that I want to emphasize here is that the U.S. government has spent decades imposing neoliberal economic orthodoxy on other countries, telling them that they have to privatize state assets and sell off companies to foreign investors, to foreign capital, in particular to U.S. companies. But at the same time, the U.S. government has been engaged in these economic warfare policies and protectionist policies when it's politically convenient and economically convenient for Washington. In fact, just a few months after Ronald Reagan put 100% tariffs on Japanese tech products in 1987, then in 1988, he gave a speech praising free trade. Reagan called for rejecting protectionism and talked about how one of the key factors behind our nation's great prosperity is the open trade policy, which of course is completely false. In reality, the U.S. was one of the most protectionist economies on earth until World War II, and then when the U.S. established its economic hegemony and domination of much of the world economy, then the U.S. lifted its protectionist policies and preached free trade and free markets. Once again, economist Ha Jun Chang has shown in his research in the book Kicking Away the Ladder, the hypocrisy of the U.S. and before that, the British Empire. They always preach free trade when it's in their economic interest. But when it's no longer in their economic interest, they resort to protectionism and economic war. And this is exactly what we're seeing again today. The U.S. is waging economic war on China and resorting to these protectionist policies that Washington has told the entire world to oppose. Back in the 1980s, as neoliberal economics became mainstream, that a better term is free market fundamentalism, under Ronald Reagan in the 1980s and also Margaret Thatcher in the UK, the U.S. government imposed these policies on developing countries, formerly colonized countries, largely Latin America, and then also Asia and Africa. And this became solidified in 1989 in what was known as the Washington Consensus. And it shows how no one actually believes in this free trade fundamentalist neoliberal doctrine. It is a political tool imposed on other countries to prevent them from developing and prevent them from actually competing with the major corporate monopolies concentrated in the global north, in the imperial core, in particular in the United States. The U.S. does not want China to compete. It claims it doesn't want a new Cold War. In Washington, they claim they only want competition with China, but they don't want competition with China. U.S. Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo said that very clearly. The U.S. is working with the EU to slow down China's innovation rate, to prevent it from competing. And as she reiterated this March, Raimondo, the U.S. Commerce Secretary, said that Washington is doing whatever it takes to prevent China from getting access to the most advanced technology. This is the goal of the U.S., which is hegemony, dominance, imperialism, to prevent other countries from developing their own high-tech industries so they are dependent on the United States, on U.S. corporate monopolies, so they can extract the wealth of countries all around the world, so they can super exploit the labor of low-paid workers around the world, so other countries can never catch up to the same level of economic development. And the plans to ban TikTok are just part of this larger tech war and economic war. On that note, I'm going to conclude. I want to thank everyone for joining me today. I'm Ben Norton. This is Geopolitical Economy Report. Please like and subscribe, and I'll see you next time.
You're listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. I am Siegfried, and that was Ben Norton of Geopolitical Economy Report unpacking the U.S. TikTok ban. Now, I want to drive home the point that this is this incident of the TikTok ban has to do 100% with imperialism. You know, it comes at a time when the United States is losing ground on all fronts, you might say, on economic fronts, on political fronts, you know, in military fronts. It's just, its power is not what it used to be. And it's clinging on increasingly desperately to that power, and given its desperation, that also makes it more dangerous. And this is what Vijay Prashad, who's you know, the excellent Marxist scholar and speaker, talked about, referred to as hyper-imperialism, you know, referring to the time period that we're in, you know, with regard to what is going on in Palestine, what's going on with the United States, you know, aggravating China over Taiwan, or pushing Russia in Ukraine, you know, trying to push NATO up to Russia's frontiers and bringing about this entire war, very bloody war. Like, all of these things, you know, as well as the, you know, decline of the U.S. dollar, it's no longer really the hegemonic kind of force that it once was, and just as basically the entire American system is no longer the hegemonic force that it once was. And he really unpacks that in a really brilliant talk which he recently gave. So I want to play that, because I think it really complements what Ben Norton was saying in that previous clip. So I'm going to turn to Vijay Prashad right now. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
We live in a very barbaric world. It's unimaginable, this barbarism. The barbarism that Comrade Hore was talking about, the barbarism of apartheid Israel's genocidal war on the Palestinian people now, 20 years ago, the barbarism of US imperialism against the Iraqi people, an illegal war, actually, a violation of the United Nations Charter, maybe 2 million people killed, displaced, injured. Not one Iraqi family was untouched by that war. Now, in Gaza, at least 300 families have been wiped out from history. 300 families. Their family names will not carry forward. That is the brutality of the Israeli bombing. It's actually quite stunning how brutal this bombing has been. It's hard to explain to people who haven't been into a war zone how ugly war is. War is loud. There's a lot of noise. War in a modern period is ugly because a lot of toxic chemicals come out of buildings when they come down, and those chemicals poison generations of people. In Fallujah, in Ramadi, in Iraq, the United States used depleted uranium. Children are still born in Iraq with defects from that depleted uranium. That is the brutality, the barbarism of imperialism. That is the attitude of Monroeism, which Comrade Jorge talked about. Monroeism is barbaric. It's brutal. Sometimes the word imperialism doesn't capture emotionally how brutal imperialism actually is. How brutal, how barbaric, how inconsiderate it is towards the lives of ordinary people. The lives of ordinary people. 50,000 people probably already killed in Gaza. There are 7,000 people missing, of them 5,000 children. 15,000 children dead in Gaza. A generation lost. That is the brutality, the callousness of imperialism. We have decided in our text, hyper-imperialism, and I have a little postcard that you can have later, which has a QR code to go and read the text on hyper-imperialism in Spanish, Portuguese, English, and so on. We use the term hyper-imperialism to capture some of that brutality, that barbarism. You see, the thing about hyper-imperialism led by the United States is that it is dangerous and it is decadent. It is both dangerous and decadent. I want to spend a few minutes on this before getting into the alternative, because I think it's very important for us to recognize the danger and decadence of hyper-imperialism. Hyper-imperialism is dangerous. 75% of the share of global military spending is spent by the United States, its NATO allies, and its close NATO allies like Japan and South Korea. 75% of world military spending is spent by the United States and its allies. Comrades and friends, I want you to think about that. When people say, well, China is a threat, when people say Russia is a threat, what are they talking about? China is a threat. That's not a factual statement. China is responsible for 10% of world military spending. The United States and its allies responsible for 75% of world military spending. How is China a threat? How is Russia a threat? How is Venezuela a threat? How is Cuba a threat? There is only one threat to the planet now, and that threat is hyper-imperialism, a structure led by the United States and its close European allies. That's the threat. The only terrorist we have on the planet Earth is the US government and its close allies, including Israel. That's the terrorist. That's the only terrorist. That's the major threat to the planet that we face today. But it's worse than that. That's dangerous. That's why we call hyper-imperialism dangerous. But it's worse than just being dangerous. It's much worse than that. It's also decadent. It's decadent. Look at the people who are leading the West. Joe Biden, Olaf Scholz, Rishi Sunak, Emmanuel Macron. Not one of these people has earned the respect of the people anywhere in the world. How is it possible that these countries, with their immense wealth, cannot produce even one intelligent world leader? How is it possible that every single leader of the global north is mediocre, is absolutely unable to finish a sentence? You see, it's not about Biden's age. It's not about Biden's age. There are lots of people who are 80 years old, 90 years old, extremely lucid. It's not about age. It's not about Donald Trump's brutal manner. There are lots of brutal people in the world. They're not all like Donald Trump. It's not like Olaf Scholz, who we don't even see. When Olaf Scholz comes on a stage, it's almost like he's a shadow. He doesn't even exist. At least Angela Merkel had a personality. Olaf Scholz doesn't even have a personality. Emmanuel Macron, come on. What is that? How has France produced Emmanuel Macron, the country of the French Revolution, the country of the Paris Commune, the country of philosophers like Jean-Paul Sartre? Europe is not producing philosophers anymore. There is no Hegel in Germany today. There is no Sartre in France. There are no real intellectuals being produced in the United States. The problem isn't the age of Biden, the lack of personality of Olaf Scholz. The problem is they don't have a project. They don't know what they're doing. They don't understand the dilemmas of humanity. They don't understand how you need to transcend poverty. They don't understand what it means to have a real project to educate our children for health in the world. We saw the complete collapse of the global north during the COVID pandemic. But before the COVID pandemic, after the financial crisis of 2008, from which they have never recovered, in that long third depression, we watch the global north struggle with things like homelessness, with things like racism, homophobia, and so on. They don't have a project. They don't have any fresh ideas. In that sense, they are decadent. They are not only dangerous, but they are decadent. Hyperimperialism is dangerous, yes. They don't know how to build bridges anymore. They know how to blow them up. Hyperimperialism is dangerous, but it's decadent as well. They can blow up the bridge, they don't know how to build it. They don't have the money to build it. Between 35 and 40 trillion US dollars sitting in illegal tax havens. They don't have the money in public hands to build bridges. They don't know how to build schools anymore. They don't know what education is anymore. They don't understand healthcare. The decadent aspect of hyperimperialism is very important for us. It's important for us because they are trying to convince the world, because they don't have a project, that there's no future. They're trying to convince the world that what you have is what you have. What you have now is what you will have forever. Nothing can be improved. You should be lucky to have what you have now because it can get worse. Still austerity, still cuts. You got a school, you should be happy you have a school. Tomorrow there may be no school. That's not a future. That's a permanent present. That might even be a giant U-turn to the past. It is because they don't have a project. They are decadent. It is because they don't have a future to offer for people. It's because of that, that there is so much hopelessness in the world. There is so much toxic energy. So many movements of the right wing. Movements of the right wing grow in an environment where there is no project for the people. For us, those of us who believe in the people, those of us who believe in the possibility of a future, it's not enough for us to just criticize hyperimperialism. It's not enough for us to just criticize the danger and decadence of the world leaders in the global north. It's not enough to just criticize them. We are very good at criticizing. We are the best anti-capitalist critics. We know how to say no. We know how to fight them. We know how to say no to them. But if we want to build the biggest movement around the world, we have to have something to which people can say yes. We need to have a project. We need to have people feel optimism. We need people to be optimistic. Not only, we need people to be optimistic, not only for the future, but we need them to be optimistic in our project. They need to believe that socialism is possible and necessary. It's not enough to say another world is possible. We have to say socialism is necessary. Not only is socialism necessary, not only is socialism necessary, but socialism is possible. You see, that's what we have to struggle with. Many people believe socialism is not possible. It's a good idea, but it's not possible. Comrade, you had your chance. Built the Soviet Union. Where is it now? You had your chance, comrade. It's over. Socialism was a good idea. Looks good on paper. It's a great idea, but you can't really do it in the world. People are greedy. People are greedy. How are you going to deal with greed? We have to convince people with a concrete project. With a concrete project, we have to convince people that socialism isn't just a good idea. That we know how to build schools. We know how to build a bridge. We can finance all of this. It's all possible. The money is there. Capitalism has developed enough. Now it's time to socialize capitalism. Now it's time to take it over. Now it's time to go beyond it. Now it's time to transcend it. Not only transcend capitalism, but transcend centuries-long problems that capitalism inherited and didn't solve, couldn't solve because of private property. Problems such as educational inequality, problems such as health inequality. Capitalism inherited it, but it doesn't know how to solve those problems. We know how to solve them. We have the ideas. We have a plan. We have a project. What's in your bag? This alternative social world, this imagination of an alternative world with its many different aspects. This is a concrete plan. It is achievable now. You see, people sometimes argue that you can't build socialism while capitalism exists. That's not true. You can make a start now. In fact, people already have. In fact, during the Soviet Union, they were building socialism. You don't have to look at, you know, inflated housing markets. You don't have to live in a slum. There was housing for people. The Soviet Union achieved a great deal in its merely 70 years of existence. Look at the Cuban Revolution. The Cuban Revolution educated everybody. Sometimes I meet Cubans and I think, you are the ninjas of our revolution. You are from another planet. You are such dignified people, like our comrade Abel. He's a dignified rock and roller. Dignity, that's what a revolution gives you. The Chinese Revolution overcame mass poverty, absolute poverty. Look at the difference between India and China. My comrades are here from Nepal, comrade Balram. Comrades are here from Bangladesh, comrade Enamul. Comrade, look at what the Chinese did on our borders. They transcended absolute poverty. We haven't done that in the rest of Asia. We have been unable to do that. It was the building of socialism now that enabled them to provide housing for people, that enabled them to vanquish the COVID pandemic and so on. You don't have to wait for some later period. You have to start building now. In Venezuela, for instance, Comrade Jorge used to be the minister of the communes. Build socialism now. Build food sovereignty now. Build chains of food. So as the MST, Comrade João Pedro is there, 40 years of the MST, 40 years of the landless movement, building socialism now in the encampments, in the settlements, and so on. Building agroecological food systems, feeding people. The MST sent 13 tons of food to Gaza because of their socialism. Comrades, I want you, we need you to read this text. We need you to read this text. We need your ideas, your suggestions. This is a plan, a program that ALBA TCP, Instituto Simón Bolívar, and Tricontinental are producing only with your help. Without your inputs, this will be just a piece of paper. We don't want this to be a piece of paper. I don't need these papers. This is not relevant. If we don't put these things into action, what's the point of having them? There's no point having us draw up a plan, Jorge, correct? What's the point of having a plan if nobody does anything with the plan? We have to use the plan, build the plan with all your wisdom, all the wisdom of the movements that are in this room. Look at some of the points, see what has been forgotten, see what has been poorly drafted, and give us feedback. And once we have a plan that we are all proud of, let's go out there and campaign with this plan. Let's go out there to the people and say, we are not decadent. We are optimistic. There is a future. Your child doesn't have to be permanently illiterate. Your elders don't have to have no health care. We don't need rich people and their money making our lives miserable. We have to use this document not only for this or that reform, health here, finance there. No, we use this document to change people's understanding of our revolution so that people look at this document and they decide. There are two forces in the world. There's the force of decadence. We don't need the force of decadence. We are finished with the force of decadence. All that they have are bombs. All that they have is intimidation, the regime of sanctions, the regime of coercive illegal measures. That's what they are. They are dangerous. They are decadent. We don't need them. We need billions of people around the world to look at our project as a concrete way to reject the decadence. And not only reject the decadence, but embrace socialism. Embrace this project. Embrace the project that you are building in Venezuela and which we want to build around the world. Comrades, there are only two choices. In the Communist Manifesto, Marx and Engels wrote, either we advanced to socialism or we'll have the contending ruin of clashing classes. Either socialism or ruin. If you look at the world today, it looks a lot like ruin. Gaza is a place in ruins. 28 million tons of debris in Gaza. If you put all that debris into the Mediterranean, you can make a whole new Gaza. That's how much debris there is from this bombing. 23 to 28 million tons of debris. That's a ruin. That's what hyperimperialism does. That's what hyperimperialism knows. In order for us to get billions of people to reject that, they have to believe in us. Not just reject that. You can't jump off a cliff if you don't have a parachute or if you don't have a paraglider. You can't jump off a cliff without a paraglider. This, comrades, is our paraglider. We have to make it together. Let this meeting be the first step we take, Comrade Jorge, where we make this project and start capturing the imagination of billions of people around the planet. Thanks a lot.
I'm sorry, but I don't want to be an emperor. That's not my business. I don't want to rule or conquer anyone. I should like to help everyone if possible. Jew, Gentile, black man, white. We all want to help one another. Human beings are like that. We want to live by each other's happiness, not by each other's misery. We don't want to hate and despise one another. In this world, there's room for everyone, and the good earth is rich and can provide for everyone. The way of life can be free and beautiful, but we have lost the way. Greed has poisoned men's souls, has barricaded the world with hate, has goose-stepped us into misery and bloodshed. We have developed speed, but we have shut ourselves in. Machinery that gives abundance has left us in want. Our knowledge has made us cynical, our cleverness hard and unkind. We think too much and feel too little. More than machinery, we need humanity. More than cleverness, we need kindness and gentleness. Without these qualities, life will be violent and all will be lost. The aeroplane and the radio have brought us closer together. The very nature of these inventions cries out for the goodness in men, cries out for universal brotherhood, for the unity of us all. Even now, my voice is reaching millions throughout the world, millions of despairing men, women, and little children, victims of a system that makes men torture and imprison innocent people. To those who can hear me, I say, do not despair. The misery that is now upon us is but the passing of greed, the bitterness of men who fear the way of human progress. The hate of men will pass and dictators die, and the power they took from the people will return to the people. And so long as men die, liberty will never perish. Soldiers, don't give yourselves to brutes. Men who despise you, enslave you, who regiment your lives, tell you what to do, what to think, and what to feel, who drill you, diet you, treat you like cattle, use you as cannon fodder. Don't give yourselves to these unnatural men, machine men with machine minds and machine hearts. You are not machines. You are not cattle. You are men. You have the love of humanity in your hearts. You don't hate, only the unloved hate, the unloved and the unnatural. Soldiers, don't fight for slavery, fight for liberty. In the 17th chapter of St. Luke it is written, the kingdom of God is within man, not one man nor a group of men, but in all men, in you. You, the people, have the power to create machines, the power to create happiness. You, the people, have the power to make this life free and beautiful, to make this life a wonderful adventure. Then in the name of democracy, let us use that power. Let us all unite. Let us fight for a new world, a decent world, that will give men a chance to work, that will give youth a future and old age a security. By the promise of these things, brutes have risen to power. But they lie. They do not fulfill that promise. They never will. Dictators free themselves, but they enslave the people. Now let us fight to fulfill that promise. Let us fight to free the world, to do away with national barriers, to do away with greed, with hate and intolerance. Let us fight for a world of reason. A world where science and progress will lead to all men's happiness. Soldiers, in the name of democracy, let us all unite!